this gospel passage earned for Mary Magdalene the title of the Apostolissa, the first of the apostles, the lady apostle. And the rest of the church has still to catch up with that vision of the place of women in the church. About there you are. There's a line in that remarkable film of Gods and Men, I think that summarizes the entire film. It's said by the old doctor monk, and he said, "I'm not afraid of death. I'm a free man." And not only the words themselves, but the way in which he said it was extremely significant, I think. It was not the kind of defiant Nietzschean text that we see so often. "Whatever doesn't kill me makes me stronger." I mean, it's this sort of self-generated bravado. No, this speaks an entirely different kind of freedom. Namely, the freedom that is grounded in his belief that he is loved by God. And of course, that's the leitmotif of all of Jesus' life. Free to do what? I'd like to take death as a metaphor for anything that we believe would diminish us. And you can go through the entire last 3 days of Holy Week. Jesus washing the disciples' feet. He was not afraid of what other people thought. He was not afraid of making himself available in that menial way to everybody. And his death itself. Yeah, he was fearful, apparently, of the suffering, but not of the fact of death, because he knew that suffering was attendant on the way he had lived. It was inevitable. How did he live? Free of the fear of the great imperial power that controlled the world, and controlled the world, of course, by violence. That's how the Romans sustained the so-called Pax Romana, by terrorizing everybody, the Roman peace. But he also was not afraid of the kind of narrowness and bigotry and exclusivity that had overtaken a bunch of his Jewish confreres, where people were excluded from his attention and diminished. But as I tried to say all during Lent, what Jesus apparently was able to bring about was to create a kind of area of freedom whereby people in his presence were free to be themselves, above all, warts and all. And the dynamic is the same, because they believe that Jesus really did accept them as they were. Jesus really did love them as they were. And so we have freedom. The ultimate meaning of freedom, of course, is not freedom to do what I want, a la Nietzsche, but freedom to be able to love, to accept everybody else. The line in the first letter of John says it all. He who is afraid is imperfect in love, because love casts out fear. So it is the whole of Jesus' career, Jesus' availability, above all, to the people that we typically ignore. The poor, the marginalized. He was able to be free for them and with them. And that's, I think, the very apogee of freedom. I mean, if I look at my own life to see what constrains me, what will people think? What will they say if? And I find myself bordered by all kinds of intimidating imaginings of public opinion or some sort of presumed self-diminution if I hang around with the wrong sort. So, the Feast of the Resurrection is, as as we all know over and over again, God's freedom responding to the freedom of Jesus. And again, it is a terribly costly freedom. You remember again in the later, next Sunday's reading, we get Jesus withholds. The constant reminder of the cost of freedom. In the Greek phrase of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the cost of discipleship. But the end of that costliness is precisely the achievement of this freedom that we see in Jesus and we celebrate in Jesus and we use as an incentive to hope in a world where freedom seems to be in very short supply. There's the freedom of bravado, the freedom of Muammar Gaddafi, you know, or Assad in Syria. They're free. They can send in the tanks. They can get all the people killed, as they're doing right now. But then standing over against that, of course, is the freedom of Jesus. And the almost implausible belief that that's the real freedom. That's the real freedom, not the freedom to violate, but the freedom to accept.